Hello, welcome back to the Potty Mouse Podcast. I am Peyton Kubik, and this is where my dad and his friend John talk about random stuff in life or the things they found on the internet. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I did. Here they are now.
Welcome to Potty Mouse, everybody. I am John Quaddy. Nick is working today, so this week I get to do whatever I want. Oh, it's not going to be that bad. Today, though, you get to be on the receiving end of something I don't get a chance to do very often. And so I want to kind of lay it out for you. That's going to be the Potty Mouse monologue. I'm not sure this is going to turn into anything we'll do consistently, but I thought it'd be kind of fun just because I'm going to hang it out on my own today. And we'll be missing Nick, but we'll look forward to having him come back. We will still do something that's a little bit different. So let's start here. For those of you who might not know our history, Nick and I used to work together since we started Potty Mouse, some 5 years ago now. We mostly shied away from discussing business-specific topics so we don't step on any toes or unnecessarily piss anybody off. If it's necessary, hey, you know, sometimes that's what you have to do. I was intrigued yesterday when I saw a post from a guy named Tony Ewing on Forbes.com, and his take was there are 9 things that you should not discuss in a work environment. I like the idea that, because having been in sort of a big corporation work environment in the past, and Nick has as well, it's kind of a unique thing. You're trying to protect your job, of course, but you also, you know, there's no sense, as I said earlier, unnecessarily making anybody mad. But there are some things that if you cross the line, it can get a little bit ugly. And that's what Tony Ewing had to say in this Forbes post. And here's what he said. These 9 things you should not discuss at work. Some are going to make perfect sense. Some kind of overlap, as you'll see. 1, presidential elections, politics, and religion. Okay, man, that covers a lot of territory right there. So, okay, I can see that. And I'm not going to go through and comment on all these necessarily, but that's kind of a big one. 2, race, ethnicity, and gender. I'm not sure how that comes into conversation in a work environment necessarily, but it does remind me of something my son said when he was like 3 years old. He was trying to describe to Lisa and me what one of his friends was like at school. And we just couldn't quite place the friend's name. And he said very innocently, of course, at 3 years old, Dante, he's my friend with the brown face. And I'm like, that is the best thing you can do and take away from a kid. It was just so innocent, and that's what it should be. It's celebrating differences. It's not ignoring them necessarily. And I thought that was kind of cool. So probably not good for work, though, necessarily. Immigration, I'll touch on that in just a few moments. That's one thing that you might not want to bring up at work. Protests, and especially when there are two, it seems like these days, there are two ends of that protest spectrum, but not bringing those up at work. Again, not really a commentary for stuff like that. Here's one I was waiting for. Sex. HR is probably not a place you want to frequent if you can help it. And yeah, any conversation about sex really in any sort of a context is not going to be warmly received in a work environment, I don't think. But that's one. That's 5 for Tony. He said your medical issues. 6 and 7, your financial problems. All right, I can see that. I don't know why you would bring it up. I mean, you're in a Zoom call or something and you start, hey, by the way, anybody have a good bank that I could use to borrow some money? Probably not a great conversation. 8 in Tony's list, coworkers, bosses, and senior management. Okay, that makes sense. And 9, and this I found kind of interesting, still to this day, COVID and vaccines. Yeah, probably not something necessarily at work that you want to bring up, but it's something that's top of mind for a lot of people, certainly was for some time. So those are his 9. And I don't disagree. I'm not, you know, here in this monologue to say anything about how it's right or wrong or when I'd add or subtract, but rather I thought it'd be fun to kind of comment on those things that you shouldn't comment on at work. Because guess what? I'm not at work. And this is a chance to do it. And again, my goal is not to offend anybody or my former employers. I'm not trying to offend anybody there either. But I want to take a look at some common sense stuff because honestly, we don't get a chance to do this very often. There's a lot of overlap in Tony's list that we just laid out there, especially the whole COVID thing. However, there are some things that do kind of stick out to me, and I'm going to streamline it just a little bit, and we'll try and address some of those from a long view. We used to call it the 10,000-foot view. I got tired of saying that, so we're calling it today the long view. And I'm going to kind of touch on many of them together because nothing really, just like everything, nothing exists in a vacuum. So all of these often go hand in hand, left or right, it seems like, in today's political environment as well. I'm also not going to engage in what I call yard sign politics. You know, when if you drive through your neighborhood, maybe, and you see yard signs, people voting for a certain candidate, I never really understood that. What's the point? Are you trying to tell people, this is how I'm going to vote? And, you know, you drive by and you go, oh, look how Merlin's voting. Well, I guess I'll switch my vote now because he has the yard sign. Nobody has ever said that, has ever done that. So yard sign politics is just kind of, it doesn't really make sense. I'm not trying to change anybody's minds. But if we can have a conversation, that's really the key part about all of this. I think one of the root causes between the dissension we seem to have in America these days is the lack of a conversation. It's one loud voice and another loud voice. And very seldom do you see people sitting down and actually having a conversation about stuff. So yeah, I'm going to look at it that way, even though this is a monologue. I'm going to invite you to reply and make it a dialogue by telling us what you think and reaching out to send me an email or just comment wherever you see the video posted, the video audio posted. We would love to hear from you as well. Always looking for ways that we can dialogue, and pottymouths.com, of course, is going to be your method for accessing that. Okay, let's start with a really simple one. I mean, you can tell I'm really going easy from the beginning. Immigration. Hey, let's start here, though. Immigration is great, as long as it's done legally. That's where I'll draw the line. Is the legal process a little bit long and arduous? Yeah, it probably is. I've never had to emigrate to this country, so I don't know firsthand. But if it is difficult, and a lot of people swear that it is, our government needs to fix that. I'm kind of a limited government guy, and I'm, again, not trying to sell you on anything, but I think the things that we should focus on as a government, certainly protecting citizens and infrastructure and things like that, but also things like immigration. We should be paying attention to that stuff. We shouldn't be ignoring it. That's one of the things the government should do. Because it's difficult to emigrate legally, should we then encourage illegal immigration? No. And that's kind of what it feels like people are doing. That's an excuse for some people. Well, it's tough to do it legally, so let's just open the border and let people walk in. That's not what we're talking about. And this, what I'm commenting on, is policy, not the people part of it. But it does have a clear human impact. Nearly 8 million people have crossed the border in the last 3 years. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just talking about numbers. If you can't see where that's a problem, then you're clearly not paying attention. Placing these people and caring for these people is crazy in a country that's $32 trillion in debt. Trillion dollars in debt. Come on. Seriously? We don't have the capacity to care for that. And you can open up a whole completely different talk track by discussing where we are spending our money. I'm not going to talk through that, but these are people. And so we said, well, look, we're only $32 trillion in debt. Let's bring these people in and encourage them by giving them, oh my gosh. Okay, so that's a problem. I think that's clear. The other issue that we don't really see initially, at least, is the stuff that goes along with illegal immigration, and that is human trafficking, crime in general, and I hope we don't see it, but I'm afraid we might, and that's terrorism. All of this stuff is an outflow of illegal immigration, and we really need to get a handle on this. Is that something we should talk about in a work environment? No, probably not. Not in a work environment currently right now. If you're listening to Potty Mouths at work, well, I salute you. But it's probably not something that I would encourage you to do. Because if you're just smiling when you have your earphones in, people are going to know you're listening to Potty Mouth. Probably, or something like that. In a work environment, look, we should not be, we're not supposed to, in a corporate environment, be hiring illegal immigrants in the first place. So hopefully that's not something that comes up in a work environment. But it should, from time to time, in a Potty Mouth environment. Other political issues do come into play when companies push divisive policies, though. Like, oh, I don't know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI is one of those things where you may have strong feelings about it. Look, yard sign politics, I'm not trying to change your mind. I just want to have a conversation. You can throw it back if you like. But I want to focus on one that I heard recently about a particular airline that's pushing specifically for more non-white pilots in order to literally change the face of the airline. As a frequent flyer, I've flown probably around 2 million miles on a number of airlines in my lifetime. And I'm happy to report to you that I've survived every single one of these flights. Every one. I have thanked cockpit personnel of virtually every ethnicity, every gender, every origin, without a single shred of preference. None whatsoever, because of how they look or how they act or what they do. The truth is, if I get off the flight and I'm alive, I'm going to give them props in the cockpit. It's as simple as that. And I don't care. None of the other stuff matters. It's all about landing safely. That's kind of flying in an airplane. That's what you do. Appreciation is what we're going to deliver no matter what the issue is. Now, but the moment you start promoting pilots for anything other than merit and their capability, passengers are going to be questioning their collective ability. It's like saying, well, you know, I need some surgery on my knee. I don't really care who does it. Said no one ever. Don't you want the best to work on your knee? Don't you want the best to pilot your plane? Of course. And it doesn't matter to me how they look or where they're from or what their gender is. I don't care. Fly the plane. Get me to my destination safely. And my family as well, by the way. So no matter how you justify DEI policies in the corporation, if you are not hiring and promoting people for anything, if you are hiring and promoting people for anything other than merit, you are the ism in that whole concept. You're the one who is doing it the wrong way. It's not about anything other than merit and abilities when it comes to things, certainly things like pilots and flying in planes and it goes to other professions, of course, too, as I said, the doctors and so on. Okay. That's my take on that. Finally, because we really have not gotten off the reservation quite enough here, let's talk religion, which is awesome, isn't it? This is a thing you never want to hear at the Thanksgiving dinner. Hey, let's talk religion. Even in my family, and I love my family, but not everybody is of the same ilk. Not everybody thinks the same way. So religion can be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. So probably not something you want to bring up at work as well. But we can do it here on Potty Mouth. First of all, I'm not a big fan of the word religion in general, because it generally talks about, it's just a repeated behavior as an extension of some sort of moral character. That's it. I do this time and time again because it illustrates what's important to me. It's not really about the religion part. And again, my take on it is I'm a Christian, and as regular podcast listeners probably know, it does not make me wonderful by any stretch, but it's because I try not to hide what I believe. Now, it doesn't make me special, doesn't make me better than anyone else, and it certainly doesn't make me saved, that's for sure. It's just how I try to live out my faith. One of my coworkers, true story, once called me Jesus boy. And it was actually a really good compliment, at least in my mind. It was a really good one. I felt good about it, and I laughed about it as well. She truly, and she didn't mean it as an insult, but she didn't mean it as a compliment either. She was just asking for prayers for a family member, and she thought I apparently had some sort of a direct line to God. And if I do, that's great. I'm going to act like I do, because I think that's what we're supposed to do when we pray. But I digress. I'm not going to try and sell you on anything here today. That's not really the point, so don't worry. I just know that given the state of things today, people latch on to anything they can that even temporarily takes them away from the cares of the world. Drugs, alcohol, groupthink, you name it, people are searching for something that they often can't find. But unless you identify the real missing ingredient, and that's hope, and for me, that's what it's all about. That's what my faith is all about. You're always going to choose the wrong treatment otherwise, if you're not looking for the real thing you're trying to seek out. Now, let me be clear. I do not have this all figured out. But suffice it to say, even though I'm not where I want to be in my life or in my faith, I'm sure glad I'm not where I used to be. And if you can say that through your whole life, you're moving in the right direction, hopefully. Again, not perfected anything, but if we have enough hope because of our faith, then it's probably not a bad thing for us to focus on. So the only points I'd like to make are these. And again, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind, but to spark some thought. And if you have any comments you would like to share with us, with me in particular, you are more than welcome to, as I mentioned from the start. Here are the points. Number one, I believe there is a creator. Number two, there is a heaven. Number three, I can never be good or holy enough to earn my way to heaven on my own. And number four, I need a redeemer, and that's why I believe in Jesus. And that's where we are. Those are my four primary drivers of the hope that I have as a believer. Not telling you it's the solution for you. I think it is. But that's not for me to say. That's for you to say, because none of that comes from somebody like yard sign politics where you drive by and say, oh, look at them. They're going to church. How lucky. Has nothing to do with that. It's just about how you deal with creating hope or having something beyond what we have here on earth. Everybody dies. That's the one thing. And I know there are some, excuse me, wealthy people who are trying to get beyond the whole dying thing. Oh, good. Yeah. No. If I could hang around at, 30 years old when I was in that kind of I'm not sure that's really an option. So everybody dies. Everybody, given a few exceptions in the Bible. But everybody is going to move on from here. So what's your plan? Where are you going next? And hopefully that's the hope that you might have as well. So if you want to know more, all you need to do, drop a comment or email me. And that is it for my monologue. Whew. If you sucked it up and made it through that, congratulations. Well done. These are some hard things, and it's okay to talk about them. And I guess that's my point in kind of going in this direction. Nick is never going to be gone again when he sees what I did on the podcast. But if you like it, again, let us know. If you hated it, let us know that as well. All I want to do is now follow up on a couple things I was thinking about while I was jotting some of those notes. And the first one is flying. And there are a couple of times that I remember, and Nick and I have talked a little bit about these over the years, I guess, but these will be just good reminders. I think about close calls, and if you fly enough, you'll have some, or I love what they call them sometimes, near misses at airport. That was a near miss. Well, no, if you missed it, it's a miss. It's not a near miss. You just missed it. But I think about close calls, I guess, when I've been on flights. One that I remember the most was leaving on a DC-10. You know how old I am because they haven't flown DC-10s commercially other than like FedEx for those types of offerings, but they don't use them for passengers anymore. L-1011s, I think, kind of went the same way. They were on the same, roughly the same type of plane. But we were leaving Newark. And we took off, and I was in first class because I flew a lot, there for business, sitting with a coworker, and off we went. And I want to say 20 minutes into the flight, I heard a big boom in the rear of the plane. And as it turns out, in hindsight, we learned that it was the number two engine. And if you remember a DC-10, you can search for it if you like. DC-10s had two engines, one under each wing, and then a third engine, which was at the top of the vertical tail. And it was just the weirdest thing. That engine blew the number two engine as we were in flight. And so it was loud and, you know, not crazy or anything, but loud. And suddenly, as we're flying along, we did a steep bank and turned. And I said, we are going back to Newark. And nobody ever wants to say that. No offense. If you fly out of Newark, I'm just kidding. But we were heading back to Newark. And sure enough, we did, and landed the plane without incident. But it was a little scary. And the captain finally came on and told us what was going on. And if you remember years ago, there was a plane crash in Sioux City, Iowa. I think it was Sioux City. And it was a DC-10. The number two engine blew, not dissimilar to this. However, what was different there is it ruptured the hydraulics. So there were heroic pilots in the cockpit. I want to say three or four of them that were collectively trying to steer the plane to help it land. So many, many people survived that, which was incredible. But so it made you think about this, because this was maybe 10 years after that. So it was kind of scary. Long story short, got back to Newark without incident. They did have all the fire equipment as we were landing, and that doesn't help. But yeah, it was a little bit scary. We got to the gate, and there was another flight leaving in like 25 minutes. I got very fortunate because I was in first class. They put me on first on the next flight and made it home. And probably the whole delay was an hour and a half from when I was supposed to arrive. So it's like, that's as bad as it gets. That's pretty good. I'm pretty blessed. And again, you get off the plane and you go, thanks, pilot. Thank you, captain and first officer and second officer. I think they had three in the cockpit on those planes. It was a little scary. Another one, we've all been in planes, probably, if you're a frequent flyer of any sort, where there's turbulence. And it's funny how people react to it, because, you know, if you fly enough, you go, I mean, there are going to be some big bumps that you'll run into. I hate the little ones that are, you know, like that, like vibration almost, except to a large degree. But some that I've been on, I mean, there are some big looping rollers that you get on, and you can hear people just like inhale with fear like that, whether they say anything or not. There was one such flight I was on. Can't remember from where or to where, but I do remember how it happened. And it was a big roller, and we go over this bump, and everybody's, you know, your stomach kind of is in your throat. And it didn't bother me much, but then as all these people inhaled, there were several of them like that. There's a little girl, 6 or 7 years old, maybe. And she said, "Wee!" And it was the funniest thing ever. And everybody is dying laughing. And her mom goes, "Honey, this is not Cedar Point." And also very funny. We all laughed and took the tension away. That was pretty cool. My favorite turbulence story. Lincoln, Nebraska, landed there one time, or attempted to land right there, and we had to go around because the captain told us, true or not, I did not know. I think it was just a missed approach. He goes, as sometimes happens in Nebraska, there were some cattle on the runway, so we're going to have to go around again. Were there really cattle on the runway? He said it made me laugh. But we did. We powered up and went back around, and not something you see very often. And it's not like there were many flights in and out of Lincoln, Nebraska either. So whatever. Anyway, that was a funny happening. And one that was a little nerve-wracking, I mean, not scary necessarily, but I was on a twin-engine turboprop. And if you're familiar with those, they're pretty small planes. They do have retractable gear, though, so it's not like it's the two wheels down the whole time. But I think, as I recall, I know I was flying into Madison, Wisconsin, and I believe I had flown out of Flint, Michigan, both at the time, especially relatively small airports. And this I don't know why it is, and I used to fly in and out of Madison all the time. It's always windy, it seems like, when I fly into Madison. Well, this day was no exception to that, and it was really windy this day. As I recall, gusts like 40 miles an hour. And you think, well, it's not a big deal. You're in a plane, you're going into the wind, and they're designed to handle all that, and it's true. But when you're trying to hit a runway and you have the wind blowing you off course and it's a crosswind, which is what this was, it was a little scary. And it was one of the few times that we had to go around again. And the captain is just so calm. And I mean, I just love how the captains are, we're going to go around one more time. We'll give that another stab, you know, something like that. And it was awesome. And we did, and everybody's really nervous. And then Rakes makes me think of the Ron White bit that he did about being in a plane where, you know, all these people are nervous on the plane. But we went around, and no kidding, I mean, it was blowing us to the side. And this guy, pilot, dropped that plane down the second time around. And it was awesome. I don't know how he did it. And, you know, people are applauding. And he came off, which I think is brilliant. When you do a landing like that, you should stand outside the cockpit and kind of, you know, yeah, I did it. And he was nothing like that, but I said, wow, nice job. And he said, yeah, it's a little bit breezy. Have a good day. And I went, wow, okay, that's the epitome of a cool pilot. He was that, and maybe certainly handled it better than many people would have. But yeah, that's a twin engine turboprop. You don't have reverse. You do have reverse thrust, but nothing that you would use in the air or anything. It was pretty impressive. If you've had some close calls, let us know. You know how to do it, pottymouse.com. Happily, I haven't had any of those flights with the fights, you know, that you see. That's the man. I don't know where these people come from. I don't really understand threats or fights or whatever. That said, Lisa and I are flying this week, though, so there's still a chance for that. But I do remember we had a kind of a, I think I can say goofy, we had a goofy family on board to a flight to Las Vegas once, and apparently they couldn't, we're in the back of the plane, and they couldn't wait to get off and start gambling, I guess. But my buddy Matt was on with us, he and his wife, and they were sort of gambling by challenging that. Honestly, we're at the back of the plane. There are 160 people in front of us. So there's no reason to be in a rush to get off or anything like that. These ladies, and they were related, as soon as they turned off, and actually it was before they turned off the seatbelt sign, these ladies are up and they're grabbing their bags and they're racing up the aisle. And to stop, because there's nobody's moving. The door isn't even open at the front of the plane yet. So they're just, and Matt, I have known Matt for years, and his face was getting a little redder, let's just say that, and mad at him. And I mean, it was just awesome. It was so much fun to to see Matt go off a little bit. And he did. And as soon as he was able, he got up and cut right in front of him, because they're not going anywhere. Why would you cut in front of people? So don't rush the aisle. That's what these ladies did. And they probably regretted it. Funny part, though, when you do that stuff on a plane, we were in Vegas for, I don't know, 3-4 days. We saw them. You know, Vegas is a big town. We saw these ladies probably 4 or 5 times while we were there. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, made me laugh when we think about, hi there, how you doing? And yeah, they were not having any of it. They didn't like us, and apparently we weren't going to be friends. What a shame. So that was good. What else do I have for you today? This is, I'm going to keep it a little bit shorter, even though I totally changed the format, and Nick probably won't even publish this. So I'm just talking to myself probably. But if he does, you're going to say, well, this is a weird potty mouth. It's okay. We'll be back to abnormal next week. Nick's not working so hard. What else? Da, 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 da. Oh, I was looking at cars this week. I typed in, so Lisa and I, since we moved to Florida, we have been able to get by with our truck and the Harley. And we could get another car. It's not that, well, we're trying to save a lot of money. It's not really about that. Although it doesn't hurt. I don't mind not throwing down money for a depreciating asset. But we're kind of getting to the point now where we probably want to consider looking at vehicles. I went on Craigslist, and she would love a convertible. And Lisa's asked about that for years. And, okay, you know, Florida's fine for convertibles. It's not ideal. People, oh, Florida, you want a convertible. Because just like up north, maybe 6 months out of the year, are you going to drop the top, potentially. The rest of the time, it's too hot. You don't want to do that when it's crazy. So convertible, yeah, is it a good investment? None of it's a good investment, but you buy them pre-owned, so it's no big deal. So I went on Craigslist and found and was kind of surprised. I was looking at some BMWs, and I'm not making a statement one way or the other about that, but that was what I was looking for, convertibles. 3 Series, typically what you can find, and I looked at something under 100,000 miles, trying to stay between 50 and 80,000 miles, let's say, and found one, and the guy was asking like 11.7 for it, and that's pretty good. That's a decent car, leather interior. The convertible top looks brand new, and great pictures of it and so on. So I went and looked at it, and the guy was nice. All he does is buy convertibles and sells them. So I've been in the car business for years. He's a nice guy. I'm, talking to him, but he's about $2,000 too high on the car. So you should be able to get one of those in the early 2000s. Let's say, I think this was the 2007, with, 70, 80,000 miles for under $10,000 or around $10,000. And at least in my mind, based on what I see advertised, and he wasn't even close to that, but we got along well, and I drove the car, and it was great. It was, there were some little things, which you can expect. But then we got home, and I'm like, I'm not in a super rush to get anything necessarily. It would be fine. The downside is, even with a 3-car garage, I'm going to have to park the truck outside from here on out if we get another vehicle, especially convertible. So I'm not looking forward to that either. I kind of baby my vehicles, and the truck, while it's a 2018, I don't want to park it outside, especially in the Florida sun. Well, I could get a car cover and 3-car garage because the Harley's going to be in, and the truck has to go in sideways or a kitty corner. Otherwise you can't get it in. So I should have built a deeper garage, whatever, but I really like the bigger truck. And so I'm kind of in a quandary. The longer I can wait, the better. But in Florida, there are very few, I think ours, and there are probably two other families that put all their vehicles inside their garages. Everybody else has crap in the driveway, and I'd rather avoid that if I could. But so anyway, looking at cars, if you have thoughts on that, a friend of mine who's also a wholesaler in the car business said, I talked to a buddy, and he said, BMW's oil leaks. He said, get this. He said, there are only two types of used BMWs, those that leak oil and those that don't. And I said, isn't that true of every single vehicle ever built? They either leak it or they don't. Of course, the question is, which one did you buy? And you have to be careful of all that, whether it's a BMW or W or whatever. I've looked at a couple. I've looked at a Lexus convertible and a couple of others, too. So I don't know. We'll see. Not a rush, thank goodness, because I don't want to rush into that for sure. Convertible. We'll see how that goes, but it would make Mama happy, and you know the rule when it comes to that. Okay, that's it for today. Off the top of my head, I know, well, I broke down the monologue points, clearly. But if you have stuff you'd like us to talk about in the future, or, just in case John's gone, what would Nick talk about? I'd like to hear that too. But we're not splitting up. We're still, dating. So he will be back, I'm guessing, next week. And in the meantime, as usual, I will just say, hey, make sure you go out to the website, buy some merch. Look at this hot dog hat. Man, this thing's awesome. Covers my head and everything. Other merch up there too, t-shirts. Women's one-piece swimming suits are up on our merch store. Seriously? The women in your life deserve a Potty Mouse one piece. And of course, you can give us any comments. Make sure you like us, smash that like button on YouTube, and subscribe if you haven't already, and hit the bell, and you know what to do. Do all that stuff. I appreciate you taking the time. It's great to see you out there today, and look forward to seeing you again next week. I'm John Q. See you.